be here. John 20. It's the Thomas story.
That's not just the Thomas
story. John 20, I think it's 19 to 31. The resurrection, post-resurrection appearance to Jesus, of Jesus to the disciples in the upper room. The text lays itself out nicely in two parts with an interlude and a conclusion. The first part is, I think, clearly enough, the appearance to the ten, and then we have an interlude with regard to Thomas's refusal to believe. And by the way, it should be stated that way. We'll come to that. It's not that Thomas doubts. He doesn't believe. You know, so to use this text to talk about Christians who have doubts is a misuse of the text. He's not doubting. He is labeled by Jesus as apistos, unbelieving, because he doesn't think Jesus is alive, right? So anyway, we'll come to that. So let's just dive in. Verse 19, ouzes un apsias te hemera ekene. Literally, being late. Ouzes apsias is genitive absolute. Apsias actually is an adjective, I think, but it comes to mean evening. So then, when it was evening, te hemera ekene, dative of time when, on that day, te mia, the first one, sabbaton of the week, on that first day of the week, and, here's another genitive absolute, ton theron keklesmenon, and doors being shut, right, having been shut, and the doors were shut. So let's do this whole thing temporally. Then, when it was late on that first day of the week, excuse me, and, beans and rice, and when the doors were shut, hapu, where, eson hoi mathe tai, where the disciples were, eson is imperfect from ami, imperfect indicative active third plural, why were they shut? Dia tan phabon ton eudaion, on account of the fear of the Jews. Now here's a great example of a so-called objective genitive. Fear of the Jews means that the Jews were the object. They feared the Jews, right? It's not the Jews who were doing the fearing. The disciples were fearing the Jews. Because the doors were shut on account of the fear of the Jews, eilthen hai Jesus, Jesus came, kai, este, he stood. This is the strong aorist of histemi, aorist indicative active, third singular. And you remember that histemi means different. It can either be transitive or intransitive. This is Veltz chapter something. And he has all that pulled together. Here, if I'm remembering right, the strong aorist is intransitive active. So it's just like what I'm doing. Jesus stood. It's not that he stood something, just he stood. Eis tamezon, into the middle, and he says to them, hi, irene himin. Now, this is shalom laka, right? Or shalom lak, or lakem here, I suppose it'd be, to y'all. And this is the ordinary greeting. In context, however, there has to be a little bit of theology attached. This is not just your average Jewish person saying hello. This is the risen Lord standing in the midst of his fearful disciples, and hello is not a sufficient translation. Let's just go ahead and go with peace to you, right? Or peace be to you, right? By the way, I forgot to mention, Mary had already told the, is that recorded? Yeah, look at verse 18. Mary Magdalene goes in order to announce to the disciples, quote, I have seen the Lord, and he said these things, and that he had said these things to her. See, so they've already heard from an eyewitness of the resurrection. But they don't believe. They don't believe. Same. Verse 20, anyway, picking up again. And saying this, he showed the hands and the side to them. That's easy enough. Charesan un hoi mathetai. The disciples were rejoiced. They were glad. Idontes tankirion. Look at this. Why were they glad? Because they saw the Lord. I'm emphasizing these things so as to facilitate the renovation of St. Thomas and his reputation. Okay? In other words, Thomas is no different than the rest of them. He is absolutely, in fact, he comes out looking better than the rest of them. Okay? Doubting Thomas? I doubt it. Okay, they were rejoiced edontes because they had seen the Lord. That's why they were happy. They saw him. They thought he was dead. Now he appears. He's not dead. Right? Verse 21. Then he said to them, the Jesus said to them again. He has to say it to them twice. Peace to you. Right? Now he continues to speak. Kathos ap estalken me hapater. Great Johannine language. The Father is dozens of times in John, the one who sent Jesus. Just as the Father has sent me, kago, also I, pempo, am sending you. Verse 22. Kaitusa apon en ephisesen. That's almost onomatopoetic, right? Phuo en phuo sort of sounds like what it means. It means to breathe or to sigh. And after he said this, he breathed. And we normally supply upon them, but notice that it doesn't say it. I suppose it's probably just fine. And after he said this, he breathed, and he says to them, Labata pneuma hagion. Y'all receive, aorist imperative active, second plural, receive the Holy Spirit. Now we have a little bit, it looks a little bit of an awkward construction. We have a conditional sentence. An tenon af eta tas hamartias af heontai autois. Of whomever you release the sins, they stand released to them. Of whomever you seize, they stand as having been seized. Okay? We rightly and typically, traditionally point to this as along with Matthew 16 and 18 for the institution of the office of the keys. Here the apostles are given this peculiar church power to forgive the sins of those who are penitent and to retain the sins of those who are impenitent, as the catechism teaches us, right? Okay, end of first scene. We're just going to keep forging ahead, not knowing who will show up later. Note the sequence. They don't believe. Their unbelief, not doubt, their unbelief is banished by the appearance of the risen Christ to them. Because they saw the Lord, they rejoiced. That's a pretty good reaction. Before they were afraid, now they rejoice. Guntus?
Not because they rejoiced that he was there, but because he showed them his hands and his side.
Right.
Wounded.
Right. Right, right. Exactly, exactly. And that will come out even more clearly with the Thomas scene. Right, that's right. Yeah.
Thomas is not doubting Thomas.
Yeah, yeah, good. Yeah, we'll come to that. And by the way, you know, it's interesting that in the Passion narrative, Luke, you know, a synoptic gospel, Luke often shares interesting things only with John. See, normally Matthew, Mark, and Luke are close, but in the Passion narrative, and especially in the post-resurrection accounts, Luke and John are very close. So, for instance, if you look at Luke 24, he says, look at my hands, look at my side, give me something to eat, you'll see that I am not, and there I think the vocable is actually phantasma, I'm not a ghost, right? But you'll see that I have flesh and bones, I think he says. And that's very similar to what's happening here in John. So that's one of those interesting things about comparing the Gospels. So yeah, this is not a ghost. This is Jesus himself, right? Okay, verse 24. And Thomas, Thomas, one of the 12, the one being called Didymus, which apparently means twin, uk ein met autan, Hata eothen ha Jesus. He was not with them when Jesus came. Now you hear sermons dwelling on why this is the case. We don't know why it's the case at all. The text isn't interested in why Thomas was not with them. He just wasn't there, right, when Jesus came. Elegon, they began saying to him, the other disciples began saying to him, he'orakamen ton kirion. Whew, that's just what Mary Magdalene had told to them. It is, in fact, exactly the same, except it's first plural instead of first singular. Look at verse 18. He'oraka ton kirion. They didn't believe. Now they're saying the same thing to Thomas. He'orakamen ton kirion. And he doesn't believe. He's just like they are. He's no different. Right? We have seen the Lord. Hade apen autois. Now see, here's where Thomas comes off even a little bit better. He knows that unless it's really Jesus, he shouldn't believe. See that? He says, it has to be Jesus in order for me to believe. Right? He says, now, I mean, granted, he should have believed their testimony, but they should have believed her testimony. Right? Eon me, unless, ido, I see, aorist subjunctive active, first singular from horao, believe it or not. Unless I see in his hands the place of the nails, and I literally throw, you know, put my finger in the place of the nails, and I put my hand in his side, I will certainly not believe. He knows. He has no reason to believe unless it's Jesus. I mean, the real Jesus, not the so-called historical Jesus, right? The real Jesus, right? His hands, his side, his marks, right? See, Thomas, he doesn't believe, but at least he understands it has to be Jesus, right? Well, lo and behold, it is, as a matter of fact. So that's the interlude, now verse 26. And after 8 days, again, they were inside. His disciples were again inside. And Thomas with them. Okay, now the second scene begins. Jesus comes, ton theron kekles menon. Here's another genitive absolute. It's the same one we had before. But now in context, this predicate position construction can bear a very nice translation. Not when the doors were shut, but what? Not after, but although the doors were shut, and he stood. Same as before. See, he estayed before, he estays now. And he stood into the middle, just like before, and he said, Irene Himin. Same greeting. Peace to you. Right? Eta. Then he says to Thomas, Lege to Thoma. Phera ton dactylon su hoda. He doesn't say, Thomas, you should not have wanted to see my hands. Shame on you. Thomas, you... No, he doesn't scold Thomas at all. He says, Thomas, let me give you what you asked for. Right? Bring the finger of you here and see my hands. And bring the hand of you and throw into my side. Kai me ginu apistas ala pistas. See? Again, Thomas is not, he has not been a doubter. He has been an unbeliever, a non-Christian, right? Because he knew that Jesus had to be raised if it was going to make any difference, and he thought that Jesus was still dead, right? Jesus now, just like with the ten, invites him to stop unbelieving and to believe. See, and I mean, it could hardly be more obvious. We've got apistos and piston, right? This is what you were, an unbeliever, become a believer, right? Now, Thomas, and then the text does not say, they rejoiced when they saw the Lord. That's what the ten did. Thomas comes out even better. He says, Thomas answered and said to him, ha kyrios mou kai ha theos mou, my Lord and my God. I mean, talking about, to use a modern metaphor, a grand slam in the bottom of the ninth. I mean, this is probably the greatest Christological confession in the New Testament. See, my Lord and my God. Verse 29. Then Jesus says to him, because you have seen me, you have believed. It could be a question. It's punctuated as a question by the modern editor. It doesn't have to be a question. In fact, I tend to think maybe it's not a question. It's a statement. You have seen because you have believed. Excuse me. You have believed because you have seen. Right? Just like the ten. Remember? They rejoiced when they saw the Lord. Right? Okay? Now Jesus pronounces the blessing, Makarioi, blessed, hoi me idontis. Notice that it's not but or anything. It's because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are hoi me idontis, the ones who do not see and believe. Okay. Now see, note the parallelism here. We've got, and I'm working off a cheat sheet I worked up one time. Two scenes, time, place, circumstance, time, place, circumstance. It's the same. Jesus appears, says peace to you. Jesus appears, says peace to you, right? Jesus shows them his hands and side. Jesus invites Thomas to stick his fingers in his hands and his side. The disciples rejoice seeing the Lord. When Thomas sees the Lord, he says, my Lord and my God. Jesus commissions the 10 and gives them the office of the keys. Jesus says, you have believed because you have seen. Blessed are those who have not seen and have believed. Here at the end of the gospel, the evangelist St. John is giving the reader the basis for believing even though the reader has not seen. Get that? I'm going to say it again. He is giving the reader of the gospel a reason to believe even though the reader has not seen. Why can the reader believe even though he has not seen? Because they saw, and it's their testimony. Got it? And I know that's right because of how the gospel concludes the next two verses. Here's the evangelist himself. Therefore, on the one hand, many other signs also Jesus did before his disciples, which are not written, have not been written in this book. But these are written by whom? By an eyewitness, by one of the 10, by somebody who saw Jesus die and then who saw that he was raised from the dead. Right? We don't need to see because he saw. See? He saw that it was really Jesus. Right? He saw that it was the hands and the side. See? Verse 31, but these stand written, ge graptai, for this purpose, so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and, parallel purpose, so that by believing, or maybe because you go on believing, life you have in his name. So really, the Thomas story is not about how we shouldn't be doubting, or something like that. It's about why can we believe? We can believe because Jesus is raised from the dead. And how do we know that? It's because the eyewitnesses were there. The apostles saw him. They touched him. And then on the basis of that, they proclaim these signs. Notice this says signs. See? It's very important. Jesus is not, he doesn't come to earth as a talking head. Right? He comes to earth as a real flesh and blood man who does things. You know, the opposite of docetism. Right? Incarnation. The Word became flesh. And flesh does stuff, especially flesh suffers and dies and rises from the dead. Right? It sort of puts a whole different slant on the whole pericope, you know. I mean, this is not doubting Thomas. This is the basis for the apostolic proclamation. And I think it can be preached that way. I mean, you can say to people, I don't care, you know, what's going on in life. You know, we have a place to stand. See, we stand not upon our own experience, not upon what we have seen. No, we stand upon what they saw, right? And what they know to be true. And by the way, for a nice parallel here, take a look at 1 John 1. Same John. Let's see, 1 John is right before 2 John. And it's two writings before 3 John. Thank you. Look at how this letter starts. I mean, talk about nuts and bolts and nitty-gritty and molecules and, you know, flesh and blood. It starts out with a relative pronoun, actually, is how it starts out, right? This is 1 John 1:1. Which was from the beginning, which, oh, we have heard, which, Here's Hail Rachamim again, which we have seen by means of our eyeballs, right? Our ophthalmologists, right? Which we have beheld, and our hands tselapha'od, they handled it. I mean, that's what it means. It means to finger it, you know, like this. See, like flesh and blood, right? See? Which our hands handled concerning the word of life. Look, isn't that great? The word of life, we handled it. We saw it. We didn't just hear it. See, we touched it. Also, the life was manifested, and we have seen, verse 2, and we are bearing witness, and we are announcing to you. See, we are announcing. We have the right to announce in this way because we saw and we handled, right? And we have seen and bear witness and announce to you the eternal life which was with the Father and manifested to us. And then he keeps going, which we have seen and we have heard. We are announcing also to you so that you may have fellowship with us. And our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. And these things we are writing so that your joy might become complete. Right? Yeah, Eric. That's a good question. I think he's sort of writing on behalf of that whole eyewitness generation, you know, himself at the center, of course. But yeah, it's like, this is who I am. I stand with this company who can proclaim these things to you. Right? Exactly right. Right. So see, he puts a whole different cast on how you can preach doubting Thomas. Because first of all, he's not doubting. Right? He's an unbeliever. Right? And you don't use this as a sermon, you know, to scold people for not believing because they haven't seen. You know, we should walk by faith and not by sight. I mean, that's obviously good theology. It's in the Bible. But it's that's something different. See, you can proclaim on, what would this be, the first Sunday after Easter, proclaim the certainty of what we believe without having seen. Because our faith is rooted in historical event, in the Word who became flesh and who was witnessed as crucified and raised from the dead, spear wound, nail holes, and all, right? Can you tell I've thought about this? I mean, I love this text, right? So anyway, that's all I'm going to say about that. Any questions? Ho, 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 besser spät als nie, ja, 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 ja. You know, I was ready to give Ezekiel a try because Ezekiel 37 has a lot of repetitious vocabulary. Yeah, we're done. Yeah, yeah. So, and now?
I have an appointment at 12:15.
Here's Ezekiel. Well, you do all the hard stuff then.